This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving, Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of The Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't know if people are listening to this in the morning, but if you follow us on YouTube and have ever watched our episodes, we are in bed today. Em and Jen...
In LA.
We're still in LA recording. And honestly, we're being lazy today. So we're snuggled up in bed. We have our mics here.
It's very early.
It's really early here. Okay, so let's do this.
Okay, so today we want to talk about becoming a therapist. We've got a lot of questions. I think we have a lot of therapist followers.
Okay.
And we've got a lot of questions about being a therapist, therapist first. And so we wanted to answer them and kind of tell you a little bit about our journey. And might not be like yours, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're just going to fire through them.
Cool.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's great. I mean, this came up because somebody DM'd us being like, hey, like, could you guys talk about therapists first? Like the first time you ever set a boundary with a client, the first time you had to charge for a no-show, like something like that, because they said like they have felt a lot of isolation during the pandemic. Probably, I'm assuming this person's fully virtual.
Right.
So let's talk. We can even talk about isolation in this job, which is like you need to have some peers you dig. It doesn't have to be at the same practice or agency that you're at, but you can join peer supervision groups. The best way to reduce burnout in this field is to have peer support.
And I think during the pandemic, a lot of things have gone virtual.
Yeah.
Which makes it much easier to feel isolated. Because I remember, Em, when we... You know, when we were seeing clients in the office next to each other, we would have 10 minutes in between.
We'd do jumping jacks.
We would just run into each other's rooms, do some jumping jacks, get our blood flowing.
Yes, right? But it's hard. And I think it's really easy when you're virtual to just like log off the session and then like kind of isolate yourself.
And shut down a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's something to be conscious of, that you're keeping yourself from being isolated in those times, especially if you're doing virtual.
Yeah.
So, should we go through the questions?
Yes. All right. We're going to pick our top 15 questions.
Okay. I think we should start with this one because maybe it starts off the episode pretty well. How you navigated the post-grad pre-license era, tips, stories, etc.
Here's what I think. I think when you're pre-licensed, right? So, like, for most people, you graduate grad school. I mean, I guess we'll like give this information for someone who's not a therapist and you have like some degree, right? So whether that's marriage or family therapy, whether that's social work, and then you have to still do a bunch of hours and take an exam to get the license. You can still practice pre-licensed, but there is certain things, right? The insurance you take, like different things that make it more difficult. Here's was my experience. I do not think being pre-licensed versus licensed mattered except for within other people in the field. I never had a client once be like, oh, like you're not licensed. And like, because you're still under supervision during that whole time working with your mentors and supervisors. So I never felt that it was a problem or it was specifically difficult.
I didn't either. I also think when you're very, you know, I think there's a common misconception that if you're not licensed, that you won't be able to help your clients in the same way as someone who's licensed. And there's actually been research that proves that therapists that are newer to the field can actually do better work than someone who has been in the field for a long time.
Yeah.
And so one of the questions we got, and we can go into this a little further, is like, how do you deal with imposter syndrome as a new clinician? Know that just because you're new does not mean that you cannot help people. It's actually like, if I think back to my first clients when we were in grad school, we did such good work together, yes. You know, because you're also
tried so hard.
You're also in the thick of your learning.
Yeah.
You know, like it's really fresh in your mind. You're constantly kind of learning and thinking about your clients. And
I think also because sometimes you have less to compare them to. You're not thinking about them in terms of like, oh, I had this other client who dealt with it this way. Like you're right. Learning. You're literally thinking about them on such an individual level, which I think is very helpful.
And I think that that's a practice that should be honed in on throughout your entire career. Mm-hmm. But it's harder because I think as human beings, you know, we put it's easy. And the way in which our brain works is you put things in categories and it helps us kind of sift through information. But yeah, when you're newer, you have nothing to compare it to, as you're saying. And so it is individualized. And that's kind of that's what we always talk about, is that therapy should be individualized to the person.
Yes.
And so to know that as a new therapist, like you actually can do really incredible work with clients. I have clients that I have been seeing or was seeing since my internship.
Do you think they think you were better then?
Probably. They're like, what the fuck? They probably thought.
They're like, man, this Jen has really gotten worse with age.
Oof, not a fine wine.
Right. So I think part of it is that, like, listen, you get comments about shit in this field. And I think there was like a certain amount of hazing that occurs from older clinicians to younger clinicians or newer clinicians, I should say, because a lot of people are like career changers in this field. But I would say this, don't focus on that shit. Focus on your clients. That's actually what matters. Focus less on like, you know, trying to impress the clinicians around you and more about in the room with being present in them.
Those are some of like the earlier days are some of the kind of most invigorating and mm-hmm. also most terrifying.
terrifying
experiences as a therapist.
Yes.
You know, like they're the days when you're like also feeling so and you still feel so fulfilled. Mm-hmm. But like the beginning, you're like, this is you just get this level of like energy and fulfillment. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yes. Yes.
And
I will say this. Okay, I have to say this.
Yeah.
I have loved, even on the very worst days of this career, I have loved every single day. I cannot imagine. I have loved every single person I've worked with. I cannot imagine a more fulfilling career at all.
I 100% agree with you. Anyone who's like, oh, I was thinking about becoming a therapist, I'm like, do it.
It's do it actually, right now.
Like, there has not been times, unless like I, you know, unless we've had like really long weeks.
I mean, we do,
but like there hasn't been time, you know, even if I'm having a bad day, I will go in and see a client and I'll leave that session and I will be having a great day. Yeah. And it's not necessarily because our session went well. It's just the level of connection and it is so kind of motivating, mm-hmm. I think, in this. And it really is such, it's, and this is so cliche, when they say when you love what you do, it doesn't feel like you're working.
No, I feel the same way.
I really feel that.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, this is the best job in the entire
world. Never have the Sunday scaries.
No, I really do feel like we have had the privilege of having the most amazing career doing this. I love what we do.
Me too.
Okay. How to not worry about clients when you're off the clock. Listen, there's always going to be a client that you like think about. Like you, when you have someone
and different
who's, like,
clients who like pop into your mind.
Yes, right. Especially when you have someone who's like really going through a crisis or really suffering or really struggling. It is like normal to consider them and think about them the same way you would as a friend. You can write that down and release it, right? So you can then like write down like in your like have like a little like personal notebook and say like thought about client X today. Was thinking about this, something pops in your mind. You don't have to like do something, you know, inappropriate or like text them or email them in some way. Like you can write it down, bring it up to the next session and say, hey, I was thinking about you on Tuesday. This came up and I just like wanted to let you know. Like you can say loving kind things like that, but you do need to release that because there has to be some type of boundary.
I think, right, I think it's impossible not to think about your clients.
Oh my God, of course.
Outside of session, because you care about them. You're human. You care about them. I do think over time, it gets easier to set those internal boundaries.
Yeah.
I think at the beginning, it's a little bit harder. Because I think also there's this sense of, you know, I'm going into this because I want to help people, right? I want to – and so something we always say is, like, you have to meet clients where they are. And you are helping guide them to wherever they want to be. And I think our mind goes into – sometimes we feel like, oh, we have more control over the situation than we actually do. Where really it's up to the client and you're guiding them and you're helping them. Mm-hmm. But – you know, I think sometimes when we think about clients outside of session, we're thinking, well, what can I do differently to, like, help them? Or where sometimes I think part of that releasing is recognizing that there's so much of this that's out of your control.
Yeah.
And that you learn over time, I think, in the field that that's the case. But that takes some time mm-hmm. in experiencing that. You go in and out of, like, oh, you know, how can I help them? What can I do differently? And then you realize that really it's up to the client. You know, a lot of it's up to the client and you're just guiding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
I think I had a mentor that once said to me, I could tell you three different ways to drive to the Jersey Shore, but I can't get in the car and drive with you. So even if I show you three very different ways of how to get there, if that client decides to take a break to get gas, to visit a friend on the way, to turn around.
Get some snacks.
Get back on the road. Get off the road. Go down an empty road.
Take a pit stop to pee.
That's the place that you, that's when you have no control.
Right.
And it doesn't mean also that you're failing and that you're doing something wrong. It's that, like, we actually are in a profession where you have very little control.
Yeah. Which is really hard.
Because therapists have control issues.
True.
Right? Okay. Late cancellations and charges with them. Feel so bad and bend it but need to protect my time. This is when it's really nice to work for a practice because you get to say, it's the policy of the practice. I am so sorry.
You know,
I have no control here. I'm getting under the blanket.
Yeah. I'm surprised you didn't start out that way.
I know. It's just, I wasn't there.
You're there now. Mm-hmm. We're there. Mm-hmm. I think this goes into a larger conversation about boundaries in general.
Yes.
Because I think that there are times where going to therapy is very uncomfortable. But you know that it's going to be helpful for you, right? It's, like, important to push through that discomfort. And I think that it's easy when you feel that way to say, like, I'm not going to go today. And if your therapist isn't charging you, you know, if it's a less than 24-hour cancellation and your therapist is kind of letting it pass, it's so much easier to be like, okay, I'm not going today. I'll just reschedule.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so it almost holds the client accountable for the work that they're doing too. If there's an emergency, we're human, they're human. Those things happen. Like, we let that go.
I read this stat once that it was like, okay, if you get one missed session a day, you lose, like, $95. Let's, like, say that that's your fee, right? So, like, $95 a day doesn't seem, like, insane maybe in the grand scheme of things. But if you add that up and if you have a missed session every single day for a year, it's, like, $35,000.
Right.
That's, like, a significant
loss. Yeah.
So, like, I think you have to think about it sometimes.
That's going to fuck people up.
Right? I think you sometimes have to think about it in, like, a bigger perspective. I might have to check my math on that.
Oh god, I
feel like that's right. Okay, right, like 95 times dying. 5 times like 52 is 24. Okay, so 24,000. Okay.
Still.
Yeah. And let's say there's multiple a day, because sometimes there are.
Yes.
I'm just saying. So think about it, like, big picture, not small. Oh, I'm gonna upset this person. You have to think about, like, zoom out.
And I think, okay, if we talk about it in the larger sense about boundaries with clients in general, right? Time boundaries, you know, if you're going over session, if you think about the things that make clients feel safe and things that make children feel safe, right? If you're, like, raising kids, is structure and boundaries, mm-hmm. right? Your client always knows the way in which session is going to start. They always know what time session is going to end. They always know if they're canceling last minute, this is what it's going to look like. And so what happens is if you, you know, kind of permeate those boundaries, is that it creates an environment where clients, you know, might not feel as safe with those boundaries, mm-hmm. right? I don't know how they're going to respond to this. I don't know how long we're going to go over. I don't know if I can bring up this topic, you know, at the end of the session, because maybe they'll go over 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So to think about like that, like structure is the structure of session or around session or the boundaries that you set are actually really important to helping the client feel like they have a level of safety in therapy. Even if it is, listen, if you cancel 20, you know, less than 24 hours in advance, I am going to have to charge for the session.
Yeah.
Because then they always know, mm-hmm, supposed mm-hmm. to like, what's going to happen today?
Yeah.
Hard to say.
Hard to say.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Okay. Feeling guilty for taking time off and clients missing sessions.
Two different things.
So, no, I think it's feeling bad taking time off from clients and missing sessions. Do you think? We're not sure. Here's how I interpret
okay,
the
situation. Yeah,
I think that the best thing you can do, one of the things I do that Jen knows, is like I'll send out an email at the beginning of like the season with my vacation dates, right? So like in October, I send out all of my December dates, and then people have a full idea of what's going. Like I try to be incredibly transparent with time off because it can be difficult for some people. And I think that this is the benefit of planning ahead and scheduling your rest and vacation so that you don't get burnt out and cancel a bunch of shit because you can't handle it. Schedule it in beforehand so that you're not doing it suddenly, because you deserve to take time off. During the summer, Jen and I take a week off a month.
We need it.
we need it, right? So from seeing clients, we're still doing paperwork and other stuff, but like you also sometimes need a week to catch up on stuff. So we had beforehand said to clients, like in the at the end of May, here's all my vacation weeks for the month or for the summer. And it made it like very seamless and transparent and understandable. And then everyone on the same page. And then it didn't feel like I needed to like cancel stuff because I like simply couldn't handle 1 second more, right? So like the best way to prevent burnout is to like not let it get that far.
Also, if you think about it this way, it is essential for you to take care of yourself in order to be able to be there for your clients. And burnout will not just affect you, but it'll affect the work you do with your clients. And so this person's saying, feeling guilty for taking time off of clients. The time that you take off is actually so beneficial to the work that you do with your clients. And you're also modeling for them, right? Mm-hmm. Would you tell a client to never take time off and just keep working?
No, God, I hope not.
Right. I mean, now we got to talk. So you have to think about what you're modeling for your clients. And I think that that can be a conversation with them if they're struggling with you taking time off. To say, listen, just as I would say to you, it's important for you to take time off. I also have to take time off so that I can fully be there for you. Mm-hmm. It's really important that I take care of me so that I am able to be there for you. And you're modeling for them to be able to put themselves first, take care of themselves so they can be there for other people in their lives. Mm. And I think that, you know, in this field, we go into this field to help other people and we forget that part of that is also being able to help ourselves.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
What to talk about in the first session if the client is slow to warm?
So I don't think that there's a specific answer for this. Yes. I would love to say that there is. But joining is so important.
Yeah.
It's so important. And so, you know, I think quickly we go into like, okay, I have to go into this like assessment phase. I have to like figure out why they want to come to
and
therapy.
And to be fair, sometimes if you work at an agency, you literally have to.
Right.
There are certain places where you
depends
actually don't
on
have
the
a choice
setting.
About that. Yeah. In a hospital setting, like you don't have a choice.
I think sometimes calling that out too.
Yes.
Be like, listen, this is the procedure. I know it's a little clinical.
Yes. I would say that. Bring it.
Say it out.
Room.
Yeah.
So this is going to feel awkward. I still have to ask you these questions. And then we're going to like really get to know each other.
Call out the
right?
situation. Once again, they're human. You're human. They're going into, you know, especially if it's their first time in therapy or if they have had bad experiences in therapy. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable. And if you have ever been to therapy, think about what it has been like for you the first time you've ever gone to therapy. What did you need in order to feel like you could open up, like you could? And when someone's coming at you with like these questions in a very dry way, it's hard to open up. So call out the situation if you have to kind of go through very specific questions, if you have to like, listen, I know I have to go through these, but you know, it's important. And then we can just like shoot the shit or we can throw in a curse. That's our move. Throw a curse word in there.
I do. That is like part of my intake thing. Like when I make phone call, I always curse. And that like it's a very strategic thing. Like a lot of these interventions is like, what is the strategy I'm using here?
Yeah.
What interventions I'm doing? And being human is an intervention. Bringing it into the room is an intervention.
I think you can also call out the fact that it's uncomfortable the first time in therapy, right? Like, yes. I completely understand how hard it is. Like, I'm a stranger still. And I understand that sometimes it's hard to, like, open up to strangers. Like, totally get that. And I know that that's going to take time. Mm-hmm. You know, like, call the situation out.
And, like, there's going to be clients where, like, you have to spend the first 10 minutes really warming up and rejoining each week. Like, I've worked with certain people before that it is really hard to still have trust. And, like, each week we have to go through this process, right? That is okay. There's nothing wrong with that person. There's nothing wrong with you. Everything is different in that situation. And how are you honoring what this individual needs versus what you feel like you should be doing?
I think, ooh, sorry, I knocked my mic over. It's hard in bed. I think too, at the beginning, when you first start out, it's easy to personalize that. You know, uh-huh. It's easy to feel like, oh, they're not opening up. This must be me. Like, I must be doing something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but over time you realize, like, some people are just more uncomfortable in therapy than others.
Yes.
And that's okay. And I think that, once again, over time, you stop taking things as personally and recognize that each client is different and each client is going to have a different experience. All you can do is hold the space and be there for them as much as possible. Call the situation out.
Yep.
Okay.
What do you got?
How important is it for a therapist to have their own therapist or their own therapy?
100% important.
Very important.
So here's what you think. You can only go as deep as with your clients as you've gone yourself. Does that mean you have to be in therapy every single week for the rest of your life? No, I don't think so. I think it's very normal to take breaks from therapy. I think it's very normal to switch up therapists. I think it's incredibly helpful and fulfilling to have those things. So, like, do you always, always, always have to be in therapy? No. But also, what else are you doing for self-awareness? So if I'm not in therapy, I'm in peer supervision, right? Like, I'm someone who has stayed in supervision way past my fin license for 5 years. My supervisor's like, are you done yet? I'm like, I am not, Tom.
I have things to say.
I have things to say, right? So, like, I think you have to make sure you're also in some other, like, processing situation, whether that's a peer consultation, whether that's a supervision group. But at the end of the day, yeah, your ass should be in therapy. This is triggering what our job is. And, like, the amount of secondhand trauma that can come from this career, you should be taking care of.
And it helps, the more you understand yourself, the more you're going to be able to separate your own emotional reactions from what the client is bringing in, which is actually really essential.
Yes.
The fact that you're taking care of your own reactivity or anything that's coming up for you, right? Like, if you see a client who reminds you of your mom, yeah, right? And they're bringing something in or talking about something that would be very triggering for you. If you're not working on that in your own therapy, if you're your own issues that you have with your mom, might be easy for that countertransference to happen where you have some sort of reaction to your client, which is going to be harmful to the therapeutic relationship and harmful to your client. So it's really helpful to not just you as a human being, but to your work as a clinician as well.
Yeah. Okay. How to juggle your own mental health while learning how to be a good therapist. SOS.
SOS.
Listen, I think you also need to, like, look at the programs you're coming from, right? If you're in a program that is, like, really working you to the bone, like, they're also, like, not – that's, like, a systemic issue.
And
like,
it's not modeling.
Yeah, so there's certain things that are systemic problems, right? That, like, if you have to have 3 different jobs while you're also in school, like, there's certain things that, like, everyone's situation is different, right? So it's really easy for us to sit here and say, hey, go take a break. But not everyone is in a position to do that.
Right.
So I think what you could do, though, is – truly, truly, like, marking time out of your day to slow it down and to take care of yourself, right? So whether that it's like, actually, I need to make sure that I, like, some people decide to, like, work on a half hour or work, like, for, like, leaving, like, 90-minute blocks because they need more than 10 minutes between sessions. Like, you have to figure out what works for you. Do I have to make sure that, like, I do a meditation after I end clients for the day? Do I have to make sure that I listen to pump-up music as I walk into the office that day? Like, what is it that's going to work for you? And what is happening systemically in the larger institution or the larger agency or internship that you're working at that isn't supporting it?
That makes so much sense.
Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blueland products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blueland proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packaged. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon. Or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
I'm going into like a thought of like, what do I do, right? Like, what are the things that I've done? And honestly, I think it changes.
Well, I think you have really broken up with your relationship with your phone a lot.
Because I've had to, especially with virtual. You know, when it went into virtual, I've really had to separate myself from screens because, you know, I think I'm thinking about kind of the process I go through that I'm constantly asking myself, how do I feel? What do I need in these moments? And it changes every day. You know, in the past, if I've had long days of clients, I have had to separate myself from screens because I realize that I am so shut down otherwise if I don't. So I started reading a book, you know, I would read books sometimes. I started to do macrame at one point.
You did have a very solid macrame, part of your quarantine
experience. I wouldn't call
it
solid. I think it lasted maybe 1 week.
Some people were tie-dyeing. Jen was macrameing.
And then I gave up. I'm sorry. Anyone who macrames, I am impressed with you.
You were really killing it for about 2 weeks, Jen.
It hurts your fingers and it's very tedious. Yes. It's like a very tedious thing to do. Anyway, that's going to change over time and allow it to change over time. And I think, you know, when we look at Instagram or we look at people are like, oh, do this to take care of yourself. That's different for everyone. I would love to say that there's a quick fix that you can turn to be like, this is self-care. Mm-hmm. But no, it's different for everyone. Also, it changes as your life changes over time and as your day changes. I started implementing this thing that I have since changed. This probably lasted a few weeks too, where I would have to get up in the morning before clients and like give myself an hour to do things for me, like separate from my husband, separate from taking my dog out. Like I really had to focus on something that I was doing for me before I saw clients because I was going to spend the entire day taking care of others. Mm-hmm. That I had to make sure that I had an hour in the morning to take care of myself.
So sometimes you have to wake up an hour earlier. Like if that's the only time out of the day, is it worth it to do that?
For the me, you
often
hour.
Wake up earlier it is.
Okay, I have a task.
Yes.
If you think about the you hour, what are you going to do in the hour before you start taking care of everyone else to take care of yourself?
And you know this is something I do a lot, as I wake up before my daughter and husband.
At like 4 a.m.
Well, everyone's waking up early in my house, right? So I wake up. I cannot, do you see me? These sheets that we're on are so comfortable. I'm sliding
down
them.
They're so soft. I know, I'm just accepting it.
I am sliding down. I have accepted it. I pulling myself up. So
no
I
one's
going
to be able to see me. I'm going to be under
and
the covers.
Even, can I have a sip of your coffee?
Of course. There's vanilla in it.
Great. Oh, you know, I don't like that as much. Okay.
But like basically straight cream.
I know it's too sweet. Sorry. Okay. So I feel like for me, I'll like get up and like even if it's watching a show by myself, I have to have time by myself.
But that's the you hour.
That's my you hour.
Right?
You me, baby.
You me, baby.
Yeah, I'm going to you it up. Okay. Trying to fill a schedule in private practice. The number one thing you can do is connect with referral sources, right? Like networking is the number one thing. I'm sorry, Psychology Today is it even bringing in the clients you want to be working with, right? So like I would truly say like I think a lot of our business is where it is because we were so loving and so warm and wanted to genuinely make relationships. Like, we valued people over profit and made great professional relationships.
Also, have a great online presence.
Yes, that helps too.
Like a website. Like, listen, invest in a good
let's
website.
Let's talk about therapist websites.
Invest in a good website.
You can buy, like, if you have a Squarespace website, you can literally go on Etsy and buy a fucking template to make your website look better. Like, you don't have to know how to do it yourself. But, like, it is astounding to me in this day and age where most people find shit off Google, how many therapists have wretched websites.
It's so true.
Let me tell you, go on Etsy, buy a Squarespace template for $14.49, shove it into your Squarespace thing. Beautiful. Doesn't need to be this insane website. Less is more often. You don't have to have some frequently asked questions section. You don't have to list every terms and service. It can be like 2 pages. It can be like information, what you do, and contact me.
Simple.
It does not have to be huge, but it matters so much.
That's where people find you, is yes. Having an online presence, having good referrals. I have to say, at the beginning, we literally did everything under the sun.
We did.
We threw shit up against the wall.
We spent $750 on
brochures.
Brochures. Hey, in case anyone's wondering, nobody uses brochures anymore.
Don't.
I don't know if anyone.
Times have changed. That was a bad. But the thing is, okay, another thing to think about, you're going to make mistakes.
We said, okay, so here's what we did, though. We could tell people. And don't forget, you know, his book is for consulting. But
nice little plug.
Yes. We sent out referral packets to everyone at the beginning, right? So we found a list. We compiled lists. Doctors, acupuncturists, dermatologists. From Google. Dentists.
We Googled people.
From Google. We made up referral packets that included business cards, brochures. Don't do that. You can just do very.
Embarrassing.
Just do very simple cardstock off Vistaprint. And a letter introducing ourselves. And we sent these out in mass. You want to know what? I'm sure most went in the trash, frankly, but you would be surprised. We, like, probably like 6 months ago, a client was like, oh, I like saw this thing. It was something that we made a decade ago. It was something that we had made in like 2014.
That was still hanging up.
It was still hanging in a doctor's office. So, like, you would be surprised if you like make like a cool little template on Canva of like 5 ways to survive the holiday stress. People will hang it up in their offices. Because they also want to give out free tips to their clients. So you'd be surprised. You know, I would also connect with professionals that have the same specialty than you and also different. Other people that are also working with women in transition, like life stage transition, and also working with, like, you know, sex therapy if you don't do sex therapy. So, like, the different and the same. But, like, those relationships matter so much.
Community over competition.
Always. Always.
And I think, you know, one of the things we had to learn in private practice is your schedule, especially at the beginning, is going to ebb and flow. And there are going to be times in which you are packed, jam-packed full, and then people are going to drop off, whether they're doing really well, whether they need to take a break from therapy. And I remember at the beginning, we would get very anxious during those down times. Mm-hmm. And we would ramp our marketing up. Right? Like, we, Emily and I would get so anxious. We would start sending more shit out, reaching out to people. And then it would come back. So know also in private practice, especially at the beginning, your schedule is going to ebb and flow. And people are going to drop off. They're going to come back. And that even after years, people will come back to therapy.
Yes.
Right? Always. And that's why sometimes it takes time in private practice to build up and get your name out there. But know that in the downtimes, it's almost you're also getting a break. Mm-hmm. If you can allow yourself that break and know that if you just focus on marketing during those times, or you focus on building your website, or what can I do differently, but just know it'll come back. It takes time.
Okay. We have to hurry up.
What time is it?
Well, we're at 32 and we have a lot of questions. Wow. I'm just saying, yes. Okay. how to know what to specialize in. Yeah. Don't push it, right? So, like, you can be vague and then, like, go in throughout time, right? So if you want to say, like, I work with people in life stage transitions, that can kind of mean anything. It can be like someone who's getting married or someone who's leaving college. Like,
everyone's in a life stage transition.
Yeah, everyone's in a life stage transition. So I would say, like, have a larger umbrella and then, like, go niche, like, within that. But don't push yourself into something you genuinely don't know. Also, like, being a specialist is not being an expert. So you can specialize in something and you don't need to be like an expert in it, but then don't call yourself an expert.
There's a lot of, I think in the field, there has been a lot of pressure around specializing in something specific for the rest of your life.
We've never done this.
And we didn't really do that. Or it changed over time.
It always changed.
And
I didn't specialize in working with postpartum until I was in a postpartum, like,
exactly,
after I had already gone through it. Then I was like, oh, I'd like to do this.
Right, because it fits with kind of your life stage too. I think that's okay. That's worked for us, right? It's worked to not necessarily specialize in one thing for the rest of time. There is a lot of pressure surrounding that because there's this idea of, is if you make your specialization very niche, that you're going to get a lot more clients. That is the case sometimes, but I think sometimes that takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay to be kind of general and think about, while you're doing this practice, who are the clients you really gravitate towards, the work you feel really good doing. And it evolves over time also as, once again, your life changes.
Yes. Okay. How to feel ready for private practice?
You never do.
Yeah. I think here's how you feel ready about it. Do I have, am I able to financially support myself with the loss of benefits? Am I able, do I know how much I need to set my fee at to, like, make it financially feasible for me? Do I feel like I have some type of peer support and community around me? And those are three very solid things.
I'm also going to say, I think, and we say this to each other all the time, one of the best things we ever did was create a private practice together.
Yeah.
Because we don't think we would have been able to do it alone.
No.
Just because having the support is so incredibly helpful.
Yes.
You know, being able to talk to someone. And that's why we do our consultation too. There's individuals who started a private practice who feel isolated, don't have direction. Having each other, being able to trust each other and kind of lean on each other and talk through things, I think has been really helpful in being able to build.
Yeah. And I think practice. It's just so much reduced shame.
Yes.
Right? Because, like, I'm like, oh, I, like, really feel like this type of way about this, and you normalize it. And I think, like, that makes a huge difference of then having the confidence to, like, keep moving ahead.
Absolutely.
Okay. Solo practice versus group practice, pros and cons. I mean, right, so solo practice, more autonomy, more control, maybe more money, sometimes, depending if you think about it. Group practice.
Also more work.
Also more work. Group practice, less isolation. Community, internal referrals, being associated with something larger, being able to also blame that larger thing, cancellation policy or something.
Right.
Yes.
And I think just the confidence to know, you know, if you're part of a group practice, you know the clients are coming in.
Yes.
Right? That there's not as much anxiety of...
Now that we've been in a group practice for so long, I could never imagine being solo.
I know. Well, we're technically the...
We're solo. Owners.
Yes. Right? Like, we started out as solo.
I feel like I'm part of the group.
You are part of the group.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But I think, less isolation is really important. Knowing that clients are coming in, also really important. And solo practice, like, if it's really important for you to be independent, create your own thing, if you have the drive to create that website, to do the networking, to do the marketing on your own, I would say go for it. But, you know, it takes time.
Okay. Feeling like you cannot make a mistake because you work with people's lives. Yeah, that one's not fun. But you can, right? Like, unless that mistake is, like, saying, like, you should go hurt yourself. That's fucked up, right? But, like, making a mistake, like, what do you think is a mistake? You know, like, you didn't do the intervention soon enough. Like, that's not necessarily a mistake. It's, like, a tactic, right? Like, so I think you have to say, like, what really is the biggest mistake you could make? You know, like, if you sleep with a client, yeah, that's a really big mistake.
That's a mistake.
Right? Yeah, that is a really fuck up. And a mistake not reporting mandated reporting thing, right? Like, that's, like, a legal and
HIPAA violations.
Error. Yes, HIPAA violations. Like, these things happen, but, like, is it actually going to affect their life? And the coolest part about making a mistake is, like, saying, I'm sorry and I fucked up. There's so much power in apologizing, especially to our clients, that are such good relational interventions.
And you're, once again, you're modeling taking accountability and saying, listen, I'm human too, right? I'm going to make mistakes. To put the pressure on yourself to be perfect because we work with people's lives. And it's incredible that you are taking that into account. Because it is. There is a level of power in that, to be able to work with people and guide people. And so to take that seriously is really important. But also remember, you're human. You are never going to be perfect. You are going to make mistakes. And part of your relationship with your client is also being able to heal those wounds mm-hmm. from mistakes that maybe you made, right? That you mm-hmm. guys can talk through it. Once again, you're modeling the relationship in the therapeutic sense that they can take outside of there, right? That they deserve, you know, that they can say like, hey, this really hurt me. And you could say, I'm really sorry. This is some, let's talk about it, right? As opposed to avoiding. There's so much growth that can happen just from that conversation. Mm-hmm. You can use it therapeutically.
Okay, final question. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Had to ask for a raise. I don't want to sound greedy. Hey, I'd like to talk to you about my fee split and increasing it. Here's what I'm thinking. I'm interested in having a 5% raise. Please let me know if we can have a meeting about this, right? Like, I think, like, feeling greedy, someone might have that. You have to remember, if there's someone else who never sets boundaries and never asks for a raise themselves, of course you're going to sound greedy to them. It doesn't mean you are. Just because you feel something doesn't mean that is about you. So sure, someone else can project that onto you. Oh, she's being really greedy. But like, that doesn't mean that you are or that it's inappropriate. It means that by chance, this field underpays and undervalues people 100%.
I would agree. It is okay to want to get paid for your time.
So and the work that money.
You put in, that, you know, we cannot do this for no pay.
Yes.
You would get really burnt out, you know. And once again, just as we were saying at the beginning, to take it full circle, it is important to take care of yourself so that you can take care of your clients. That might be something to say when you're asking for the raise. Listen, it's really important that I get this raise so that I can fully be there. I'm feeling burnout so that I can fully be there for my mm-hmm. clients.
And sometimes I don't even give that, like, would not recommend to give that much information. Because yeah. then people can say, like, well, then what else are you doing to take care of yourself? Like, you don't actually need a fucking reason to get paid.
Right.
You could ask it and it could be like a full sentence. That's it. No other things. That's your stroke, choke, and kick. You're so much nicer than me.
No, but I think
I'm like, I need a 5% raise or I'll die.
But I think, I mean, and this is not always the case. You have to remember that in a lot of cases, the people that you're asking for a raise are also therapists, mm-hmm. right? Also, I would hope empathetic and think about people and care about their clinicians. If it's never a conversation, if they're like, I don't care, that's not going to be a conversation we ever have, or that's, you know, then you can also think about, where do I want to be, mm-hmm. right? That it's okay for you to want to get paid for your time.
Yeah. Hey, that's the episode. So if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, review, give us a 5-star review, subscribe. Hey, watch it on YouTube. You can see us in bed. That's could be taken out of context.
Yeah.
That's fine. follow us on Apple Podcasts. Please send this episode out to a friend. And don't forget to grow yourself. You got to know yourself. We see you next week. We'll be right back.